Welcome to Artwords. Today we are going to have a conversation with Madam Winnie Oyuko, who's a designer, lecturer, and a lifelong advocate for creative education. So Winnie has had a fascinating career, from working with international research institutes to teaching design and mentoring young creatives. In this episode, she shares her insights on everything from gender representation in advertising to her research on visual clutter in Nairobi. So we'll explore how design influences public perception and Winnie's take on how we can move towards a more thoughtful and balanced approach in both advertising and society. Let's dive in. So, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the podcast. Could you please introduce yourself and telling us who you are and what you do?
My name is Winnie Oyuko. Currently, I'm teaching here at the Technical University of Kenya. I teach in the design department. I teach communication design. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and an avid supporter of children's education.
Do you have a hidden talent or hobby that you'd like to share with us?
I like African art, and anywhere I go, I'm always collecting. People have told me my house is a little bit like a museum because I'm always collecting stuff.
Okay. What do you find most rewarding about being a lecturer?
When my students excel, when I see the excitement on their faces, when what we are teaching rings home, they come with good assignments,
yes,
good interpretations of their work. When they bother us or when they bother me, I get very happy when they're also happy with their results.
In your opinion, what do you believe are the most important qualities and the skills for designers to cultivate?
To be open-minded,
yes,
to be inquisitive, and to be passionate about what they do, and to always share what they do with others.
Yeah.
People think that if you keep the information to yourself, it's okay, but the more you share, the more you put it out there, the more you'll get responses and the more you'll, you know, improve your iterations.
So have you had any opportunities to design projects outside of academics? And if so, mm-hmm, could you share your experiences?
Well, before I came to academia, I was working with an international organization. I did that for many years. And then one of my lecturers, who has now retired, met me and got me to get back to academia. I initially worked with a research institute, an international research institute, ICPE to be precise, where they were working on insect physiology and ecology. And I used to work with a whole array of scientists in different fields. So I learned a little bit about the intrigues and intricacies of science. It used to culminate in a lot of conferences. And at those conferences, they always had poster presentations of their work. So that's where I got involved, doing the posters, designing annual reports, designing certificates and memorabilia. Initially, before the onset of computers, I used to do it by hand. So I had to sit down with the scientists, understand what they were saying, get the work, then figure out, come up with a layout of how best I thought that would work, then the back and forth with them, and then make sure that the data that was being interpreted was interpreted not just correctly. The facts were there, but it was also aesthetically appealing and in tandem with the style guide of the organization.
That was very interesting to hear.
Thank you.
I'm sitting here wondering, after graduating, do you just go and apply for these big organizations, or how do you get into those places?
When we were in our final year, one of the HR members from ICPE came to the university and they asked for 3 students whom they could interview. So we were taken there, we were given an interview. Then I was called for the second interview, and that's how I got my job. So I never applied, which is bad.
After that, it was like a momentum. It set up for other opportunities.
In hindsight, now looking back, if I'd started looking for jobs, maybe my ears and eyes would have opened to different kind of opportunities. Not that I'm saying what I learned was not useful. I've used it a lot. I still use it. But that's how I got into that field. And that field actually propelled me into book design. I was trained on how to do book publication and design in Philippines. And then I came back. I worked with them for a little while. Then I went solo.
That's very inspiring.
Yes.
Because out here we are hearing design. Is that really profitable, or can you give you a job? But your experiences, it gives us a lot of hope in this course.
I think in life, it's important that you do what you love to do. You must be passionate about it. I know when I went into the International Center of Insect Physiology and Ecology, CIPE, my friends asked me, what are you doing there? What are you drawing? You're drawing insects? How? You're a designer. What are you doing there? So they had to come visit and see, and then some of them got interested.
So with all these successes and all these accomplishments, why did you decide to come and do this research?
I'd been dilly-dallying and saying I'll go back to school. But it happened when I met my professor in a bank. Then he said, Winnie, you know what? You're godsend. I was going to call you. I need you to come register so you can do your master's. So I thought he was joking. So I went to his office anyway. And he actually showed me the application. So he said, go pay your fee, come back, and, you know, you can start your classes. So I did that. Then I got a scholarship to do my master's. So I did my master's. Then he said, now I need you to come and teach so you can share your experience with the young people. So that's how I landed here.
So that's very interesting to hear.
Yeah.
And according to how you express yourself, it looks like you enjoy teaching.
Initially, it was a bit daunting and a bit different. I wasn't very sure. You meet different cadres of students, you meet different personalities, you meet different skill sets. You know, when we teach, it's not just us who learn. And I always tell my students, when I'm coming to engage with you, it's not like I'm going to give you everything that you're going to learn. We are going to learn off each other. So it's an interactive conversation that goes on and on and on.
While you are teaching is when you came up with the research, right?
No, not when I was teaching. I was walking, minding my own business, trying to get to GPO so I could get the bus that takes me home. And I'm looking and I'm saying, hey, before when I used to walk, I didn't used to see so many signboards. But now it's like all you see is these things. You can't see the trees, you can't see the skyline. That got me thinking, is it just me who's seeing this, or are there other people who see it the way I see it? Initially, when I was starting this study, I was looking at just visual pollution of billboards. But visual pollution is quite a loaded word, two words. The content on the poster could also be polluting, you know. So that's when I started looking at different aspects of visual pollution. There was a time I was just conducting an off-the-cuff kind of questions with different people and ask you, do you see billboards? What do you see when you see those billboards? The billboards that advertise alcohol, the woman is always suggestively dressed. Why? See, the alcohol is the focus of attention. Mm. So should we be focusing on the woman or the alcohol? Because women, we are most often seen sexually before we are seen as me, you know? Mm. So when you look at adverts where a woman is, you'll find either her cleavage is showing or she's sitting in a position where you're going to see some leg, you know, some thigh. It's always suggestive. Even if all they're advertising are drinks. And that's where it comes in, that women begin to have a perception of the way they need to be seen. Especially those who are younger, who are more easily pressured to conform or accept if the model is somebody that they look up to, they'll want to be like that person. So we have to be very careful. How do we portray those adverts? What are they saying? What is the net message that they want to get across?
Personally, I think it depends on the message. Like for skincare products, if it's targeted to men, then I guess the men have to be there. If it's targeted to women, women have to be there. It just depends on the message and the target audience. That's what I think.
Interesting. My beef with the billboards is that the ones which are for men, even if it is skincare products, the men are very nicely shaven and they're dressed well. They're not exposing. So my beef is, why are women exposed and men are not exposed? I think we have come to accept things in a certain way. We get lulled into seeing, accepting the norm or trying to be where people expect you to be. So you find a situation where women are always having to fight for their presence to be felt. Even in the working environment, when you go to a meeting, more often than not, they look at the lady if something needs to be served. So you have to say, no, the food is there. You're next to it, so just pass it around, you know, that kind of thing.
Do you think that the tug of war between genders over roles and responsibilities has impacted relationships or family dynamics?
To an extent, yes, because we have a situation where women are coming up. Women are expressing themselves, and you find yourself certain times there's that, for lack of a better word, parity. Who is going to be at the head at the end of the day? So it's almost like a competition, where else it should not. We should complement one another. Now, talking as a woman, as a professional woman, you go to work, you work, you come back home, you're expected to do extra work at home. But the ideal situation should be, or would be, where you both go to work. When you come back home, again, you assist each other so that chores are finished quickly and you can both have some quality time together.
What strategies can us as the younger generation adapt to create a more balanced approach to the gender roles?
For one, be able to talk to one another honestly, openly. Discuss what you want to do. And if it's not responding to your expectations, speak it out and say why. Because if you're going to work with somebody else or work in a group, you need to understand the group dynamics. Once you understand that, even your ideas will be easier to sell.
What other advertising strategies can be more effective or sustainable compared to billboards?
The main reason why you have billboards is so that people can look at it as they're moving.
Yeah.
You know, motorists, pedestrians, it's on the go. If the message is simple and what you're able to remember it, it's for you to retain as you go along. Though, it's very interesting, during COVID time, we didn't have many billboards.
Yeah.
The air was clean, billboards were less, you know, there was less clutter. But I guess that was because also offices closed, some businesses closed. So those who make their money putting up billboards didn't have as many orders to put billboards up.
In your view, what impact does visual clutter from excessive advertising have on consumers?
You have an overload of information, so making a quick decision becomes a bit of a problem. And if that continues to happen, people tend to ignore. You tend to ignore those billboards or that information, which might be very, very useful. Anything that is too much is not good. I'm trying to find out if it has a direct bearing on sleep patterns, too much exposure to all those advertisements. Do they distract? Do they interrupt your sleep? What effect do they have on you psychologically also?
So while you are making this research, how would it be very effective in mitigating this issue?
I'm hoping it's not just a study to be left on the shelf, but something that we can actually use. And that's the reason why it's important to engage everybody. Your response was quite interesting. So I think I have a sample. I can sample the students who are here, get their opinions on what they see, because it will have an impact on what I do and how I do it. I said I'd done off-the-cuff interviews with a few people I knew and some I didn't know. And that's to get their perspectives, because it's quite a subjective topic. What I see, what I perceive, is not necessarily what the other person sees. Yes.
Yes, so I'm wishing you all the best in completing your research and also it having the impact that you want. And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and coming to us.
Thank you. And I hope you'll be part of my study and contribute and take it up from there. Whatever I don't do, you guys, you take it up and take it to the next level.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.